The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The newly minted Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, expected to lob a shattering blow at federal bureaucracy and redundancies. Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy both tapped as co-leaders. Listen to this.
Over half a trillion dollars that's spent every year right now was not even authorized by Congress in the first place. They can't even tell you where it goes. We've talked a big game for 40 years about cutting the federal government, about reducing the scope of the federal government. Politicians haven't been able to do it. And so Elon and I, we're not politicians. We're businessmen. We're coming at it from the outside.
Mr. Wonderful. Kevin O'Leary is the chairman of O'Leary Ventures, and he joins us now. So, Kevin, back in 2010, the Simpson-Bowles Commission proved that it's not hard to find waste, fraud, and abuse in places to cut spending. What's hard is getting Congress to go through with it. Is that going to be any different this time around?
Yes, it will be different. What Bowles didn't have at that time was the megaphone Elon Musk has. You got to remember, politicians have to raise money. These days, they do it using social media. Now, what Elon has, that people keep forgetting, because they say, well, he doesn't have a legislative mandate here. And I say, oh, he's got better than that. He's got X. So what happens is you're in some state somewhere and you own a project to nothing and you're spending $2 billion. He just will shame you out. He'll start naming to all of your voters exactly what you've done wrong and what you're not doing to fix it. And I love the concept of just squeezing heads to stop waste, because all he has to do is turn on the machine. Now, it's going to be very contentious. I've said this multiple times about this mandate. Mm-hmm. The power he has is not to be underestimated, because if you can get to the voter of that governor or that senator that's wasting money in his eyes, and he can make a good case on X, you're going to cause a lot of damage in that constituency. And I love this idea because it's a negotiation. That's what it is. If you don't fix this, I'm going to call you out.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you. It's been a while. It's Thanksgiving Day, and hope you're having a great Thanksgiving. Obviously, a very important day to spend time with family, to be thankful in prayer, some meditation about all the really wonderful blessings that we're experiencing. There's a wonderful sense of enthusiasm now among, I think, a large portion of the general public. Certainly, there are some that are anxious about the times that are ahead. But we also need to use this time to just pay attention to what's happening on the world scene. And so if you have a little time today on Thanksgiving, I'd appreciate you joining me with this program. Over the last few days, or probably, I guess, weeks now, your host, Stephen Fleury, has talked about some of the changes that we hope to see in this nation to make America great again. What a great campaign slogan. And I think that's what everybody's looking forward to. One of Mr. Fleury's programs in particular that I really appreciated was the one on RFK and just making America healthy again. As you saw in the cold open there is a certain leverage that this new administration has now with the general public being able to expose things on social media through the X platform, or formerly Twitter. And what I liked about the RFK example that he used is you can really make people look pretty foolish if they are, you know, sounding opposition to making people healthier again. Just stepping back and looking at some of the statistics of the general health of America, of our children, and just the increase in spending and the dependency on narcotics and other tools that people use to promote health. It's a system that's broken. It's a system that's broken. We're often told how great it is. We see television commercials all the time that promote these new medications, new narcotics, new ways of life that are supposed to make us healthier and happier. And yet stepping back and just looking at the fruits of what's happened, it's pretty remarkable how quickly we have declined So building off of that theme, I thought I would spend a little time today talking about another area. Hopefully there's three or four related areas that I think will come into play here to also just highlight some of those promises that were made from politicians, the Biden administration in particular, but then also just looking at the fruits. What has happened since then? There is big money involved. There is ideology involved. There is employment involved in so many different facets of society. We're really feeling the pain, economic or financial pain, each family is in this country. The world is feeling it. This world is kind of cascading in troubles and problems. And so this new administration comes along with its administration of disruptors. And I think that is really something that's quite appealing to a lot of people ago. Just a few days ago, Mr. Steve Fleury talked about the fact that the resistance is losing steam. And how can they not lose steam? They see this increase in the popularity of Donald Trump, more popular than before. I saw just a chart that showed how many more votes he had. And I was even surprised Oklahoma, I expected to be about the same. And it was pretty similar, but he even got more votes in Oklahoma than he did the first time that he was elected president. So in modern day politics, there is this concept of hope and a change of administration, I think is what engenders that hope. You know, bringing back an incumbent to office for another term is likely to return the same results that they've brought all along. The incoming president, Donald Trump, has been consistent in his pledges, in his analysis. Really, you can trace it back to his first administration and see that things will probably just move forward in a very positive way. The other thing that I really love about Donald Trump's administration is their stated solutions. They are their solutions, their planned solutions. What makes this different, though, is the experts that he's bringing in to give him help. So it is exciting as we near the entrance of a new administration. And I'm anxious to see how well he follows through with his campaign promises. When you consider his first administration, his first presidency, he did, I think, really a pretty remarkable job trying to achieve what he promised. But then, of course, he was attacked by the liberal element. I mean, mainstream media was constantly fighting against him. If that wasn't enough, they weaponized the Department of Justice, as we've talked about so many times here. It was really an uphill battle, quite a struggle that he had to fight. And I think, as has been pointed out, he learned a lot too in that first term about who he could trust. Now, I was personally expecting more shenanigans around the elections. I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't think that the liberal element would just lay down. And I don't think they did. But I think there was so little they could do because the Biden administration, the Harris team, they all looked really very unpopular because of the fruits. They could not overcome their unpopularity. And so today what I want to do is I want to contrast the Biden administration, some of their promises and pledges, and then look at what they achieved or what they failed to achieve, and then compare that a little bit to Donald Trump's agenda and his solutions. We're going to focus mostly on the economy. I'm going to talk at length at the start here about just the bloated government. When you just take time to look and consider how big our government has become, it is really shocking. Politicians, you know, they carry a reputation of being less than honest, to put it mildly, and they live up to that pretty frequently, just about all of them do. And it's not just in the United States. I think what we're seeing is around the world, there's this explosion of lies, an explosion of will worship. The outgoing administration is renowned for their lies. Their campaign for re-election or for the Kamala's election, again, pockmarked by lie after lie after lie. And it was just accepted. It was brushed off. It was denied. That, you know, on top of just lacking focus, So what is behind all of these lies? Why is it that politicians lie? Why is it that times have gotten so much worse with lying? We have to think about cause and effect. If we want to solve problems, we have to understand what caused those problems. In John 8, verse 44, Jesus Christ said, "You are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do." He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth. He didn't live in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. That is the problem. Think about the warring that's been going on against humanity, really. In the United States here in particular, we put a lot of focus on America Under Attack. And really, what a powerful book. And as you look at the thrust of that book, it does expose who's really behind it, as we just talked about there. The Apostle Paul told his protege, Timothy, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, it says, "This know also." He's telling this young man, just be aware of this, that in the last days, the days that we're living in right now, perilous times shall come. He says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful." That's of particular importance on this day where as a nation, we should be expressing our thanks. But what Paul was telling us through this prophecy is you come to this end time and probably the furthest thing from people's mind is expressing thanks. Really what he says here, I mean, there's a lot of coveting. I was talking to another friend of mine and he was just bringing out that covetousness really postmarks this public holiday because Black Friday's on everybody's mind. You covet food, you covet the day off work and sleep, and we don't really use this day as was originally intended to humble ourselves and to just express some gratitude toward our Creator, to pause for a moment. Paul continues here in verse 3, again, talking about this modern end time world without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. I mean, you see that evidence, and we're going to see more of it as you find individuals that are plotting and scheming to stop or to halt the disruption, right? The making of America great again. There is a concerted effort to pause that, to derail it. That's exactly what you find here prophesied about. Verse 4, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure, more than lovers of God. Again, just a side note for Thanksgiving. It's more about pleasing the self than acknowledging God by and large. And then the consequence here, a more general thought, they have this form of goodness, right? Or godliness, as Paul says. Goodness, godliness, either one really. Politicians can have that, can't they? They can have this form that they're there to help and to serve, that they have the best interests of the nation at heart. But as the verse continues, denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Right? We are not to be fooled. We are not to partake of this kind of an attitude and approach. And so we have to look to our God. Well, I don't want to make this all about the spiritual element. I just want to look at even some of the physical things that we've seen here. Campaign pledges, campaign promises, they can sound very appealing during the election cycle. If you're not really savvy and you listen to, you know, the liberal side or the conservative side, it's not too hard to find some agreement with each of their points if you're not thinking deeply. If you're not paying attention to the follow through with some of those promises, if we do follow through, which I want to do today, and not to just dwell on the past 4 years, but I think it is important to understand, to look back over the last 4 years, to understand what we're facing and to be forearmed, I guess you could say, or just to be ready for some of the likely attacks that will come against the Trump administration. This show does pay attention to the results. We do follow the promises and the follow through. President Trump uses a slogan, promises made, promises kept. And you know, that slogan, that statement is not unique to him. It's been used before. But what is unique to Donald Trump, I believe, is the fact that that's actually a pretty true statement that he makes. I want to watch a clip of him just making the statement. You could go ahead and play clip one, please.
Just as I did in my first term, we had a great first term, a great, great first term. I will govern by a simple motto, promises made, promises kept. We're going to keep our promises. Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people. We will make America safe, strong, prosperous, powerful, and free again. And I'm asking every citizen all across our land to join me in this noble and righteous endeavor. That's what it is.
That's what it's going to take. It's going to take all of us making some changes. And what's, I think, especially interesting when you consider President Trump there is that he's assembling quite a team. The cabinet nominees that he has put forward, some of them are not politicians. He wasn't really a politician himself before. And perhaps that's why we can feel so enthusiastic about the potential for some real change. I think in a lot of ways, it's more believable because some of these individuals, they've had tremendous success themselves, and they haven't had to game the system to get that success. The comedian, commentator, Bill Maher, he said this just a few days ago. This is an article from Fox News. He says, do I have really good optimistic feelings about it? No, I don't. I'm just not going to pre-hate. I can't get into that mindset. Let's see what the disruptors can do. Because quite frankly, the experts have just sort of like let something go for so long that it's just, and then he used some different words, but that it's just become hardened and bloated. That's an interesting perspective to take from a journalist, a comedian. He does, you know, like to be a little bit edgy. It probably helps him keep more of his audience. But can we do that? Will this nation do that? Will they give the disruptors a chance? Will they give them some room to operate? Fox News picked up the story here. It says the HBO star offered some skepticism toward how effective the disruptors will be when the corn lobby or the pharmaceutical industry and the defense contractors begin voicing their objections toward the administration's policies. Mayor said, let's see what happens. Right? The hope, the approval, the level of resistance, you know, the resistance is going down, the approval's going up, but the real fighting hasn't begun yet. Again, what I really appreciate about President Trump is having the courage to state his objectives up front. And that makes it a little bit easier for those that are resisting to plan to sabotage or to wreck those opportunities for them. Will they have impact? If we all work together, can we cause some change? Will they let the disruptors have free rein? I've been joking with several people that I'm going to have a lot of individuals to watch and follow. There's a lot of really interesting personalities that will be brought into the administration that will be affecting change, and it's not going to be reported widely. So we're going to have to do our work to follow their level of success. Just makes me, again, especially thankful for Elon Musk purchasing X and having that platform now. So the Doge team is lifting our hopes because they're talking about trimming government spend, government waste, and that obviously appeals to everyone. You know, if it was a liberal idea, they would be in full support, but because it's been put forward by a conservative, you know, they're not super excited about it. You can look at human nature, and it depends on what side of the fence you're sitting on. But nobody likes to see waste. Nobody likes to see that at all. I want to first talk about employment. And what I want to suggest today is there's a number of different elements of the government, of the public, of the media that are going to push back against this idea of downsizing. Let's go ahead and watch clip two, please.
Most of the people making these decisions, from healthcare to the Department of Defense, are failing on effectiveness because they have no accountability. Historically, it's been the view of many scholars to say that those people could not even be fired. Now we take a different view with the environment the Supreme Court has given us in recent years, and we're going to use that in a pretty extensive way, Maria, to move quickly.
You're going to have pushback not just from the left. You may have pushback from those very people who are running those departments, running those agencies. They want as many people as they want in there. You're going to want to fire people. Yeah. So how are you going to deal with that? You're also perhaps looking at pushback from Congress. You've got, how are you going to deal with Congress? How are you going to deal with having Congress need to change the law?
Well, look, the beauty of this is I think we have a lot of allies in Congress who have their heart in the right place. But what we've learned is over the last 40 years, even conservatives, we've talked a big game for 40 years about cutting the federal government, about reducing the scope of the federal government. Politicians haven't been able to do it. And so Elon and I, we're not politicians. We're businessmen. We're coming at it from the outside. Sometimes if you go inside, you become native to the system. So President Trump, I applaud him for his creativity and his open-mindedness to setting this up for success in a way that hasn't happened before. But I come back to the principle. In the early months, score quick wins through executive action, show what can be done then, and then I think we will lay the groundwork for Congress to have to take meaningful steps in budget reductions for the future.
So I'm going to draw attention to this later, but just watching that clip, it's just really refreshing to find somebody that's well-informed, a good communicator, that can express their ideas. And Maria Bartiromo, excuse me, probably still said it wrong, she brings up some good points. Who is going to resist this? Well, actually, quite a few people. As she pointed out, even just working within an agency that is on the chopping block, supervisors and even some of the subordinates, they will want to protect one another's jobs, to watch out for each other. So you have government employees that are going to resist this scaling back of the government. There's likely to be bipartisan resistance, as was noted by Vivek as well, that Congress as a whole, the Senate and the House, both Democrat and Republican, are likely to resist. Now, why would the conservatives resist? Well, as we all know, the way politicians operate and stay in office or get into office is through financial support from their lobbyist backers. And so they have some debts to pay. They've been bought. And so any resistance to affecting those lobbyist position is going to be an uphill battle. It will take some political courage. Then there's those in the general public that have perhaps a little bit more liberal leaning. They're likely to resist just because it's Donald Trump. We don't need to see any more evidence of that. We've had 8 years of it. Doge, as Vivek points out, and he will in just a moment, I think, in another clip, but he did in this interview, he also brought up government contractors. And that got me thinking a little bit, too. Government contractors that can overcharge and often do, that you could almost claim they extort the general public through the federal government to line their own pockets. They're not going to be happy about this additional oversight. They too will form their resistance. So if you collect federal employees and post office workers and active duty military, they make a distinction between them, but basically the federal government employment, if you look at the impact of contractors, how many contractors do you think there are tied into the federal government? It's a really slippery number to zero in on, but I found a pretty convincing report. It was from 2015, and they estimated 40% of the government workforce is actually through contractors. So the counting of government employees on payroll, post office, active duty, All of that, you can follow payroll and you can, you know, track the number of employees and the spend on payroll. Contractors by nature are paid for a contract. And so the number of employees they use is something that's really hard to determine. So you have this blended status of contractors working with federal employees. Again, it's going to be interesting to see how the government contractors respond, how they respond to these cuts. So here's what will happen that I think will affect the wave of popularity probably pretty quickly. With government layoffs, you'll likely see a corresponding increase in unemployment, right? It just makes sense. You're laying people off. So you're introducing more people into the workforce, or those that are looking to join the workforce. So unemployment will undoubtedly rise. Now, you don't see a lot of talk about this. The economists haven't zeroed in on it yet. The anti-Trump or mainstream media, they will turn their focus to this, because that's a common measurement used to this point to determine how effective is the president at keeping the nation employed and keeping families at work. They will pounce on increased numbers of the unemployed. There are a lot of proposed cuts. Now, these programs or departments or employees, it all sounds really good to cut, to scale back. As Vivek said, you know, for four decades, we've all looked at that, I think, with big eyes, thinking, what a great way to get our debt under control. But when the reality hits, when neighbors are out of jobs, or when the unemployment figures do increase, and there's more competition for some of the existing jobs, it will be interesting to see how the public responds. I'm sure you've noticed that the unemployment rate has been falling, especially over the last year as we approached the election. The Biden administration really worked a number on the reported new jobs, and they were showing unemployment was decreasing, right? That the number of employed was on the rise. They were trying to convince us that, you know, inflation wasn't that bad, that wages were keeping up with expenses. None of that was true. They had to revise their reports frequently, and a lot of those revisions were done rather quietly. But a lot of the employment that was added, people put back to work, as we know, mostly was a recovery from COVID, and President Trump drew a lot of attention to that. I think we also noticed, too, that a lot of those new jobs came from new government jobs. These are just a listing of newly created government jobs since President Biden took office. In 2021, he added 392,000 jobs to the federal government. 2022, 299,000 jobs. 2023, back up to 392,000 jobs. So there's over 2 million people that work for the federal government, and that excludes the post office and the military. So 2 million people work. So 400,000 employees added per year is pretty substantial, but that wasn't enough. They had to keep trying to make things look better. And so in 2024, it's estimated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that the Biden administration will add 540,000 jobs to the government. That's a 37% increase over his first year and over the previous year. Massive numbers of new jobs. That's 1.5 million new jobs added to the government. Now, of course, there are those that retire. There are those who finish their jobs. But it's obvious that a lot of new government jobs were created. More simply, government got bigger. It became even more bloated. And all of that was in an effort to help the jobs reports look good, to bring that administration back into office. I'd like to put up another chart here showing government employment. This one, it's pretty hard to see. This is federal, state, and local employment from 2012 through 2023. And basically, there's a couple things I want you to notice on this chart. It just, look at the change from 2012. It's just a strong uphill rise, right? There's a lot more people working for the government going back to 2012. And then, of course, COVID hit, which was a natural, correction, you could say. And then look at the rate of increase of government jobs moving from COVID forward to today. What kind of an impact will DOGE have on that chart? Will it look like COVID? Probably not that steep. I don't really think it could. There are a lot of jobs on the line. I have another quote to you from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They said in 2022, 69.6% of the employed worked in for-profit businesses. So about 70% of all employees work for private business. For profit businesses. 6.5% work for nonprofit organizations, like our college, like this church. And 13.5% of the employed worked for the government. 13% of our nation is employed by government. By my calculations and by what that chart shows you there, is we're talking about 23 to 24 million government jobs on the federal, state, and local level. It's going to be really interesting, to me at least, to see if the DOGE cuts, they have authority over the federal government. Will their initiatives to scale back government, will that roll down into state and local governments? It'd be really interesting to see. There's a lot more jobs. The majority, probably about 90% of those jobs are held by local and state officials. So we need to see some change there as well. Now, it's been suggested that a 10% reduction probably wouldn't even be noticed, right? You could fire one out of every 10 employees in government, and the productivity, the level of service probably would be largely unchanged, right? You wouldn't notice a 10% decrease. What about a 25%? Decrease. 25% of the people losing their jobs if they don't want to come back from remote working, if they just really, abhor this new administration, they're willing to walk away from their jobs. If 25% of the workforce walks away, retires, quits, or is fired, you're talking about 6 million jobs on the local, state, and federal level. If you just look at the federal government, again, where DOGE has their authority, a 25% reduction would be over 500,000 employees that are laid off or fired. The Department of Justice is estimated to employ over 115,000 employees. You might remember that the Biden administration added 86,000 new employees to the IRS. Department of Education, from what I looked at today, was really pretty surprising. About 5,000 employees. Again, this is on the federal level. But again, you can ask it. You can look at the fruits and say, well, what are those 5,000 people accomplishing? And it has been brought out a number of times. Those are not low-paying jobs. The Food and Drug Administration, where RFK will have his big impact, right? There are 18,000 employees there. So if a 500,000 government employees are all of a sudden unemployed and looking for work, that is going to dramatically increase the level of unemployment. From a financial impact, again, well, actually, this one's from the Congressional Budget Office. They said the U.S. government spent approximately $271 billion on payroll for its federal employees in 2022. So $271 billion to cover payroll expenses, not contractor expense, just payroll expense for employees, was, again, $271 billion for 2022. That includes the wages and benefits like health insurance and pensions for roughly 2.3 million workers, excluding military and postal service employees. To translate the savings of a 25% reduction, you're talking about saving nearly $70 billion per year. So again, just like any business, you know, one of the major components of the total cost of being in business is payroll. That's the area that they're going to look to, you know, not first and foremost, hopefully, but if they have to, that we could use the $70 billion a year savings just from scaling back payroll. That doesn't include infrastructure reduction and other things that will also provide savings. That sounds great, but again, I just want you to remember that is going to put thousands of people out of work and looking for jobs. I'd like to watch another brief clip here, if we could please play clip three.
You expecting to close down entire agencies, like President Trump has talked about the Department of Education, for example. Are you going to be closing down departments?
We expect mass reductions. We expect certain agencies to be deleted outright. We expect mass reductions in force in areas of the federal government that are bloated. We expect massive cuts among federal contractors and others who are overbilling the federal government. So, yes, we expect all of the above. And I think people will be surprised by, I think, how quickly we're able to move with some of those changes, given the legal backdrop the Supreme Court has given us.
This is where I kind of wanted to bring up again, just the impact of having, you know, very intelligent individuals part of the cabinet. Obviously, you know, many people obviously that work for government have a certain level of intelligence. But you find here some of the cream of the crop, those that are really driven, those that have been individually and personally successful. They know how to fight. They know how to war, how to overcome bureaucracy, how to affect change. And again, I think we all know that's what is causing the ambitious dreams of scaling back the size of our government. The other beauty that they have at their disposal now is an alternate to mainstream media. And I think where this is really gonna play in, and you heard Kevin O'Leary even discuss it at the cold open of this show, they have a platform now to promote their success, to let the public know just how well things are actually going for them. That's awesome. And the other thing that they'll be able to do is to expose the opposition, to expose politicians that stand in the way of change, or lobbyists, or government contractors. And that's why you see mainstream media in a panic, right? There is a tool now to expose. That is perhaps the greatest benefit of this new administration. Well, we'll take a break here. It's been kind of heavy with statistics and all of that. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, we'll look at a couple more examples.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
I can't think of another book that I would promote the same as that one. I guess really all of our literature, it's hard to categorize it or to, you know, consider which one's more important. But that is such an important foundation. And really, it gets to the heart of what we're discussing today. So if you don't have a copy, which hopefully there's a few of you left that don't have one, please request a copy. All of our materials free of charge. There's no obligation. We're very happy to send it to you. We encourage you to read and study it and to prove what we're talking about. Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the weakening of the American military. I'm running low on time, so I'll bypass that. That is something that has set us back, that puts at risk America's greatness. That's something obvious to all of us. So the economy is worsened. The military has been weakened. Government jobs and just government size has been expanding ridiculously. Consider this headline. This is from Fox Business. And just let this sink in. It's several days old now. It's the shock value is probably mostly gone. But just think about this a little bit. Their headline was, U.S. national debt hits a new record, $36 trillion. The subhead below that is, U.S. national debt passing $36 trillion comes months after $35 trillion mark was reached in July 2024. That's kind of what I want to focus on. I mean, you can look at that debt counting as it does there. $36 trillion is something we can't comprehend. But I think what's even worse is the fact that that debt, that total debt, increased by $1 trillion in 4 or 5 months. 4 or 5 months. To put that in perspective, the empire, kingdom, Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia's gross domestic product for an entire year last year was about $1 trillion. So we're taking the entire Saudi GDP and adding it to our debt in about a 4 or 5 month period. From NBC News, they said not only is the federal debt at roughly $36 trillion, but the spike in inflation after the coronavirus pandemic has pushed up the government borrowing cost such that debt service next year will easily exceed spending on national security. Again, something to wrap our minds around. Surely this is one of our greatest vulnerabilities. And that's especially pronounced now that we're entering a hot phase of trade war. Again, President Trump has been very transparent in his plans. The tariffs that are announced, even in just the last few days, with respect to Mexico and Canada, a lot of pushback, a lot of threats going back and forth. You know, America's been a dominating power for years, but you can't do that much when you're in debt. You can't do that much when you're handcuffed like this. Now, we've talked a lot about 2 Kings chapter 14. It's a prophecy about God saving Israel temporarily. He does so at the hand or by, you know, Jeroboam, who, America Under Attack identifies as President Trump. We have another booklet that I believe has been promoted here on the Trumpet Daily. It's America Under Attack Was Prophesied. Sorry, trying to get that centered in the screen here for you. America Under Attack Was Prophesied. Gerald Fleury offered that booklet on the Key of David program a couple months back. And it was one of our most highly responsive programs we've had in probably the last year or more. A lot of people need to understand, we all need to understand that America Under Attack, what the meaning of that message is. But the proof that it was prophesied refines our focus. And as I start to wrap up today's program, that's what I want to do. Again, we can cast stones all day long at, you know, previous administrations, whether they be conservative or liberal. There are some well-intentioned people that don't do well. There are a lot of, you know, forces and issues out there that can inhibit growth and prosperity. But what's really taking place, as is pointed out in these two books, is a spiritual war that's ongoing. That is the message that we want you to really understand and study. And again, I think that's well covered on these programs. It's nothing new for you to consider. I want to return back now to look at President Donald Trump, because I said we were going to compare and contrast how these two administrations line up. We've looked at the Biden administration's promises. We've, you know, taken a look at their shortcomings. What are some of the goals for the new administration? If you want to bring up the website from, I think this is just DonaldTrump.com. I probably have it on here somewhere. DonaldJTrump.com/issues. So the subhead there is big ideas, bold ambitions, and daring dreams for the America, or for America's future. As you scroll down, you start to see, I don't know if they're in order of his priority, but each one of those subjects there is something you can expand out and read more about. Rebuilding the greatest economy in history. Fair trade for the American worker. Unleashing energy dominance. Securing our borders. The war. War on drug cartels. Stopping crime. I mean, you can go down and look. Again, what's really refreshing is to find somebody that will just enumerate their goals. And they'll give you specific ways to achieve those goals. You might remember during Kamala Harris's campaign that she did a cut and paste job off Biden's goals. It was very humiliating. But as you look through what Donald Trump is targeting, it does really touch just about everybody's lives. And his dream team of disruptors that are very successful, again, give rational people, I think, real hope. So I want to compare Donald Trump and Joseph Biden. And I want to go back and actually just look at, as we introduced, just a couple other areas to look at. This is from 2020, the presidential debate. It was hosted by Chris Wallace. And I want you to just watch this particular clip, and then we'll look at the fruits again.
Vice President Biden, I'd like you to respond to the president's climate change record. But I also want to ask you about a concern. You proposed $2 trillion in green jobs. You talk about new limits, not abolishing, but new limits on fracking, ending the use of fossil fuels to generate electricity by 2035, and zero net emission of greenhouse gases by 2050. The president says a lot of these things would tank the economy and cost millions of jobs.
He's absolutely wrong, number one. Number two, if in fact, during our administration, the Recovery Act, I was in charge, able to bring down the cost of renewable energy to cheaper than or as cheap as coal and gas and oil. Nobody's going to build another coal-fired plant in America. No one's going to build another oil-fired plant in America. They're going to move to renewable energy, number one. Number two, we're going to make sure that we are able to take the federal fleet and turn it into a fleet that's run on their electric vehicles. Making sure that we can do that, we're going to put 500,000 charging stations and all of the highways that we're going to be building in the future.
It's great to go back and listen to that. Again, it sounds great. Right, we're saving the environment, we're generating new jobs, we're helping the economy, we're switching to, you know, new, very efficient electric vehicles, and the thousands, I think he said, if I'm not mistaken, or I have a quote later, an estimation of 500,000 charging stations. Some of those obviously privately held or privately invested in. I'll come back to that later. But he talked about $2 trillion on green jobs. And these are just some areas I'm going to focus on. Nobody's going to build a new coal-fired plant or an oil-fired plant. Nobody's going to do that in America. All of these great jobs and infrastructure. So Chris Wallace said, the president, talking about Donald Trump, the president says this will tank the economy and cost millions of jobs. So they say hindsight is 2020, right? If you can look back at promises and you look at the fruits, what happened? Well, when you compare these two, that's why Donald Trump won in a landslide, because people do remember those wonderful promises. And they look at the world around them, and what they see is Donald Trump in one sentence, one clearly stated sentence, was exactly right. This is going to tank the economy and cost millions of jobs. And that's exactly what we've seen. The Obama administration started a lot of these incentives, right? The Biden administration in 4 years implemented in a very radical way some of these changes. They felt comfortable doing so because they probably felt they could ensure that they were going to stay in power. And so there wouldn't be this retroactive look at the fruits. And so by the hand of Jeroboam, God gives us a little pause to say, okay, well, how has that really worked? Let's look at job growth in the green industry. President Biden pledged millions of good paying jobs, right? You heard him say that on the clip. Again, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, this is a government agency that reports on employment. They're supposed to be unbiased. They're supposed to be bipartisan. I doubt that they are, but you can't sugarcoat a lot of this. This is from their report from April 2022. So after a couple years of implementing their policy, you recall all along, anything that was negative was blamed on the Trump administration. They never, never accepted responsibility. So how did things go? It says from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as the data shows, the number of new jobs is projected to be relatively small in these and some other green occupations. Just how small, right? That we were told millions of jobs. August 2023, this organization called E2, they did the Clean Economy Works, the Inflation Reduction Act one-year review. So they gave a little bit more clear answer as far as how small those gains were in the field of green energy. It says 1 year after the Inflation Reduction Act was signed into law on August 16th, 2022, private industry has announced at least 210 major new clean energy and clean vehicle projects across the country. So hundreds of projects announced. Private industry did this. They got behind the promise or the pledge. It says, based on publicly available information from 178 of those 210 that announced that included new jobs or investment estimates, If completed, the projects would create a minimum of 74,000 new jobs and add $86 billion in private investment. That same organization said only 117,000 new jobs were added from 2018 up to the time of writing this report. That's a far cry from millions. People that were promised to, you know, go retrain yourself, retool yourself. Don't worry about losing your job. Shameful. There's another chart that I want to show you. And again, this one's kind of hard to decipher online. But basically, they're projecting the number of new jobs going forward up to 2030. And the totals are about the same as the previous 4 years. So 10, 15, maybe at best, percent of the promised new jobs have actually come into play. More than 80% turned out to be a fabrication. That's a far cry from millions of new jobs. Moving on here, you might remember that President Biden said that nobody will build new coal or oil-fired plants. He didn't say natural gas, but natural gas is a fossil fuel, as you know. It's, you know, demonized by radical environmentalists. It probably keeps John Kerry up at night. Think of this headline. This is from SP Global. This is from May 2024. The title is U.S. has 133 new gas-fired plants in the works, putting climate goals at risk. This article goes on to say that there are four new oil-fired plants under construction. And there are two coal-fired plants that have been announced. So again, promises made, were they kept? This explains the change in a lot of ways. I was going to talk to you about the hidden costs of clean energy, which again, I'm sure you're familiar with that. He talked about the government fleet being replaced. I had an example here from a military base the only one I could find from the military. They replaced 1%, 1% of their non-tactical vehicles with EVs. You might remember this headline from Politico, December 5th, 2023, about a year ago. Congress provided $7.8 billion for electric vehicle chargers. Built so far? Zero. Zero. That's what we're talking about. There are consequences to lies, right? The truth. The truth ends up coming out. You can't hide the truth. Satan doesn't abide there, right? Those that have surrendered their human nature to lies and will worship, they can't hide. You start to look at some of these fruits, and I think that's what's going to make, you know, evaluating the new Trump administration with his disruptors so very interesting. Will they be different? Can we expect that change? I want to show one more. Well, I don't have time for this clip. Donald Trump was just, again, reminding Joseph Biden that what he was going to do was going to crush this economy, crush this nation. As Stephen Fleury pointed out, and has been for the last several weeks, it's ludicrous to argue against some of these changes. You look like a real fool if you want to keep the status quo with America Health or with the expanding government or the weakening of the military. How do you really stand and fight against that? Who really enjoys the weaponization of government agencies like the Department of Justice? It was wonderful for the liberals when they were in control, and today they're moving away, they're retiring, they're doing whatever they can to scramble to get away. Who doesn't want change? Politicians don't. Mainstream media doesn't. It's almost like there's a war against repentance. And that's because, as I said at the beginning, this war has spiritual foundations. I want to read to you a very compelling scripture, one that's well known, that's often misquoted. I'll read it to you in its entirety, 2 Chronicles chapter 7 and verse 14. And this is great to think about on Thanksgiving, to think about personally and nationally. It says, "If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land." We all need healing, individually, as families, as nations, as this entire planet. We need healing. And right there in one verse, God tells us how to achieve that. Well, I've overdone my time. I appreciate you staying with me today. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving and look forward to getting back to watching more of the disruptors and the fruits of their efforts.